Today, we'll recommend an EV for Jason, who's looking for a pickup truck with big towing capacity, a highway cruiser for David, who has a 90-mile commute, and help Sarah and Marcus decide if a Rivian R1T is the right vehicle for their specific situation. Welcome to Battery Bargains, where we shortcut your search for the perfect EV. This is episode number 59. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining me today is Dave Connor from the Out of Spec Dave channel, along with Andrew Lambrecht from Evercars, a used EV buying platform with actual physical locations. So if you'd like your own EV recommendation, send us an email at hello@battersincludedpodcast.com telling us your needs and budget, and we'll feature your case on an upcoming episode. All right, so I guess let's kick things off with our deal of the week. So far, our deals of the week have been used EVs less than 3 years old with under 30,000 miles and a price tag under $30,000. So this week, we're going a little off script and looking at a new vehicle, but we're not going to recommend that you buy it. Instead, we're going to recommend that you lease this one. And that's because our deal of the week, and let me see if I have this up here, is a Polestar 4, and that is the new one. It should be up there now. Right. Yeah, Polestar 4 Coupe lease. All right, and you can see here in the corner, if you're watching this on YouTube, it says lease from $399 a month for 39 months. This is a $1,000 down deal. And also, right, so if you are a current Polestar owner, they have another $1,000 they can lay into your monthly payments or whatever. So this is our deal because the company will be winding down its U.S. operations at the end of the year. It's putting like this $19,000 on the hood for leases, plus another $1,000 if there's already a Polestar vehicle in your household. They're actually, if you buy them, they're putting, I think, $25,000 on it, but that's a whole different kettle of fish. Mm-hmm. When you talk to Dave about buying cars, one of the things he always brings up, and this is such a great piece of advice, but always have your exit strategy in mind. And so exiting from owning a Polestar a few years from now, when there's no Polestar, dealers around or anything, might be a tricky situation, but if you're leasing it, there's no problems, right? You can just send it back to them, or maybe they'll make you some kind of crazy deal to keep it. But you can make those decisions like down the road. Yeah. So that means, so for $399 a month, that gives you a rear wheel drive Polestar 4. But there is a slightly problem.
That's a dual motor.
$399. Well, this is a dual motor on the screen, and that's the exact problem here.
Yes.
Because as you can see, this one says lease from $676 a month. So the word went out about this deal like a week ago, or just about a week ago. And I feel like any single motor, rear-wheel drive, Polestar 4s in the country are gone because they were like $31,000 basically.
Yeah.
Right? Or $399 a month. But I believe there's a shipment coming. I mean, you could call your Polestar 4 and see if they can, what kind of information they can give you. But I was under the impression there was a couple thousand more Polestar 4s on their way here from, they make them in South Korea, actually. They started making them in South Korea so they could get around the majority of the big tariffs on imported cars, right? But that didn't really work out so well for them. But anyway. The truth of the matter is that really it's a $499 a month, at least if you can find the right vehicle. So we can change this from price from low to high, and you should be able to find a dual motor. For $499 a month, and that comes with a pilot pack. So that's your lane keep assist and all that kind of stuff is in there. But not a whole lot of extra options. But you can, as you can see, if we scroll down here, you can get cars with more options, pilot pack. These could have bigger wheels or a few different options, maybe different paint colors that cost money. That's why the prices are a little higher. But yeah, you can get I saw some with performance versions and pilot pack and a few different things. So the prices can get up, you know, pretty high a month. But, you know, if you're looking for that bargain, the bargain is, you know, $499 for the dual motor or $399 for the single motor. But then again, too, also, I don't know if I would do this if I didn't live somewhere close to a Polestar store or a Volvo store that currently houses a Polestar dealer, basically. Because that's, for all intents and purposes, that's probably who's going to be doing the service on your Polestar going forward. So before you pull the trigger on something like this, make sure the store you're buying it from them, you got to get from them a commitment that they have a service plan for you. Like, you can take it to the Volvo dealer and they will, you know, take on that service load. There's been mixed messages coming from Volvo, I think, but they're both kind of have ownership by Geely in the big Chinese conglomerate. So they should be able to work something out, I would hope. I don't know. What do you think about this, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry too much about the service. They'll figure it out. The thing that I would just caution you on is, I think what we're trying to do is put you in the camp of, here's a cheap lease deal, but until you sit down with the dealership and go through the fine tooth all of the details, you know, these asterisks scare me. You know, lease from $499 a month with a little one up there. You know, so what does that actually mean? So, you know, they're putting a lot of money on the hood, which is great. Even without the $7,500 down, because these are not cheap cars. I mean, the what's the MSRP on a Polestar 4 dual motor? Like, they're
70,000.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. So, you know, so, but keep in mind, you're going to have to put down tax, or I don't know, apologies for my instant message going off.
That was your ringer?
Yeah. But, you know, just if you're interested in a Polestar, there is a little bit of noise, but be opportunistic about it. If Polestar is pulling out of the U.S. market, smell the blood in the water and go have the conversation with the dealership. It's a great car. I mean, I happen to think it's, you know, this is the one without the rear window, right? You got the camera in the back.
Right.
It's kind of funky, right. But it's a cool car. But yeah, I mean, just be careful. And until you actually sit down with them and go over and see what the numbers are, do your due diligence, figure out what it is, and then you'll be able to, you know, this just gives you that ballpark. Here's where it is, $399, $499 a month. But those asterisks are really, they're going to be something to be concerned about.
They also have the Polestar 3, which is the nicer one. But those are at $579 a month. And the down payment, there's a big down payment involved here. It's it's in here somewhere, but yeah, it's a lot more, 5,000 down. Yeah.
The only other thing I'd add is, so, whatever the deal is that they say, okay, don't just think that's the deal. Right. If you really want to make a deal here, you know, talk to them about, maybe they'll even go, these guys are going to be in the business of selling these cars. And while some of those rear wheel drive Polestar 4s, you know, the real cheapo ones, maybe are gone, whether or not they're getting another shipment or not, I don't know. But I think you mentioned that earlier, Dom. But just realize that you are in the driver's seat when it comes to, first of all, leasing a new EV, in my opinion. I think you're in the driver's seat, especially with a Polestar.
So the other thing about these Polestar 3s, and maybe this is where you can really apply that pressure here, Dave, because these Polestar 3s, these are actually 2025 Polestar 3s. So that means these are 400-volt Polestar 3s. The Polestar is changing all their Polestar 3 to 800 volts, giving them newer motors, making the rear biased power trains. They're getting a better suspension. Kind of a big refresh. This one has had the 2025s has had their computers replaced so they can process things better, but they're still kind of primarily like a front drive sort of car. And they're just not as desirable as a new 2026, but they don't the 2026 didn't quite make it to the US. So I don't know. I think they're asking for too much, even with all that money on the hood, considering they're leaving the country. I would try to hammer a better deal out of them for that, basically.
Agreed.
Yeah. So Dave,
and I'd love to hear Andrew's thoughts, sure. But one last thing is, keep in mind that Polestar and Geely, they're making cars for the entire world, right? And so for the decision for them to pull out of the U.S., that's not something I would be afraid of from the company itself. You know, you get a lot of these EV startups and you're taking a chance and you buy something from them. This is a major league established company that's still very much building cars for the world. So as long as you can get comfortable with whether Volvo is going to, you know, service it going forward, definitely buy it right. Make sure you steal the car if you're buying it. And if you are leasing it, at least, you know, definitely try to get negotiate the best price on the lease on behalf of the leasing company, which in this case, I would imagine it's Polestar itself. But everything is negotiable. Know that. And the good news about leasing is, you know exactly how much money you're on the hook for when you sign on the day you drive it away. When you buy, you don't really know. So those are the things to think about.
This would be a good time to mention that, Dave. So you have all this great buying advice. You're starting a new YouTube channel, a new kind of thing where you're helping people buy cars. Maybe tell us a little bit about that so people can
So real fast, and thank you, Dom. Out of Spec Deals is a new basically division of Out of Spec where we are going to be negotiating car purchases on behalf of buyers, whether they're used or new. And the idea is that when you think about buying a car, typically it's the second largest transaction you'll do in your life, right? Behind real estate. And while it's super easy to buy a new Tesla, a new Rivian, a new Lucid, or lease one, because it's direct from the company itself, there's no negotiation. When you either are buying a pre-owned one of those cars or the dealer model itself that's out there, it's a really kind of a snake pit, a dangerous place to walk into dealerships. And a lot of people have a lot of anxiety about it. And, you know, look, if you got a really good friend that can help you, you know, Andrew, call him up. He'll help you get a good deal. You know me, call me up. I'll help you as a friend. I've done that for years. Kyle and I both have done this for years. And also the other thing is that there's so much information out there today on the internet. So if you want to be an informed consumer and learn about what should I be paying for this car regionally, perhaps, or based on the supply and demand of that particular model, that information is out there. However, if you're either busy or you just don't want to deal with it, call me, okay? Out of Spec Deals. We're in the process of organizing the infrastructure around this. I just retired from my 41 year of career on Wall Street, JP Morgan, Citibank, Lehman, the whole bit. And the organization around helping people negotiate car deals is what I'm setting up right now. And yes, we're going to make content around the deals as well, because sometimes when you're dealing with car dealerships, look, they're fine. They're great. Sometimes they can get a little shady and entertaining, if not, right? So look, what Tommy Mikula is doing with Delivered is amazing. He's built an incredible business. And while he's super successful, he's doing 400 or 500 car deals a month. Okay. How many thousands and thousands of car deals are out there today? So I am super excited about launching Out of Spec Deals in conjunction with Kyle, my son from Out of Spec. And we're going to see where this goes. The most important thing is that I'm super excited about having fun helping people either save money or know that they've gotten a fair deal. And we'll see what happens. We're going to give it a shot.
All together. Hey, so when does the first Out of Spec Deals video go up?
Well, we'll see. I mean, first of all, I'm probably going to put a lot of the content initially on Out of Spec Dave. And then...
Okay.
We'll see how it goes. If people like the content, maybe we'll rebrand one of the existing channels that been around for a while, or maybe we'll start a new one from the ground up. I think the most important thing is to see if I'm going to do proof of concept. See if people like the idea, if people like the content, if people are getting value in having me help them buy a car. You know, we'll see. I feel good about it, but Dom, sometimes in life, what you expect to happen doesn't really pan out. So we'll see. But I feel good about this one. We'll see.
All right. So you also came in this morning and you had your own deal of the week besides what, I had myself. Someone had recommended this particular deal of the week. So I thought we'd share that as well, because it's a pretty sweet one.
Yeah. Put that one up.
So what are we looking at here?
This is pretty cool deal
when it comes up.
Actually, Colton from Out of Spec Detailing Channel sent this over to me last night, and I thought we should share this. This is something he saw on, I guess, X or wherever. Maybe it was, yeah. Andrew, why don't you take us through this? Because you thought this was pretty sweet.
Yeah, this is a great deal, I think. I'm still I like to get really cheap leases, so out of my budget. But this is still, regardless, a really good deal for this truck. First off, sale price, $54,000 for cash purchase, which I don't think is terrible. This is probably the Sierra EV Elevation, which is the entry level trim. So unfortunately, it's probably not that one in the picture because that looks to be a Denali with the 24-inch wheels. But anywho, it's still a Sierra EV.
True.
Still has over 120 kilowatt hour battery. But the lease price is $665 a month with zero down. 24-month lease, which I like. I don't like 36-month leases. I really prefer those 24-month leases. Zero down, which sounds nice. It's not going to be zero down at the dealer. It's going to probably be in the ballpark of $2,000 to $3,000 down, effectively down with taxes, fees, dealer fees, add-ons, whatever. I don't think this is a bad deal at all. I think this is pretty reasonable. If you want to have a pretty cool truck for 2 years, this is probably going to end up being $850-ish total, including down payment for 24 months, or sorry, every month for 24 months. So yeah, I think this is a pretty decent deal for sure.
Yeah, you make a good point about 24 months as well, just generically. But one of the direct benefits of a shorter lease horizon is the fact that you're going to pay less in taxes. Because basically what happens is if you lease a car for 36 months and it's $100 a month in taxes, you're going to have to write a check for $3,600. I highly recommend you write that check at the time you lease the car. Don't roll that into the lease payments, because then you're paying interest on top of the tax, which is like a real bad no-no from Finance 101. But in the case of if it's $100 a month tax and it's only 24 months, you're only writing a check for $2,400. And then you have also the fun opportunity to get a new car every 2 years instead of every three. So I like that as well.
Yeah. And I think another point on that too, with registration. So this really irritates me, but Polestar likes to do these weird terms like 27 months or 39 months for the Polestar 4. And the issue with that is, depending on how strict your state, I mean, you're going to have to do it anywhere you live, but like in California, coming up on that 3 year period, I'm going to have to re-register the car. It's the car's MSRP is over $60,000. I'm probably going to pay somewhere in the ballpark of like $1,500-ish to just re-register that vehicle in the state of California to have in-date tags. And then I'm only getting to use 3 months of that. So,
yeah, Andrew, in that case, wouldn't you get a prorated amount back as a refund?
No, not in California.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, California really likes their money. But
that's nuts.
Now, the thing is, you can go without registration for that brief period, that 3 months. It is illegal. But if you do get pulled over and you explain it, there's a chance the trooper would be like, okay, like maybe. But then it goes on the manufacturer. So there's actually so you can return a lease car with expired registration in California. I'm not sure about other states, but you can return a car in California without, with expired registration. Yeah. Expired tags, not registration, expired tags. And it's actually okay. Like, it goes on the manufacturer then. So then it's a manufacturing bank's responsibility, but the bank and manufacturer can't like charge you. So there's like some weird rules there. But so the point is, I don't like those leases. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, on this particular vehicle on that GMC Sierra, that was a loaner, right? So it already had some miles on it, but it was sold as new. So the vehicle warranty will kick in on the in-service date that you actually take ownership of the vehicle. It's not already punched or anything like that. So, but knowing that it is one of one, when and if you call that dealership, because we just saw that yesterday, chances are it's gone. You know, it was probably legit, but just fasten your seatbelt, because now you got a dealership that's going to probably try and get you into something that's maybe not as sweet a deal. But be aware that these types of deals are out there, and keep searching for them. Thank you, Colton, for sending that one to us. We appreciate it.
That's great. And the Sierra EV, the GMC Sierra EV, is like the GMC version of the Silverado EV, and it's got just a little bit nicer seats and material, I think, inside. Right? It's just I think it's probably a, you know, if you have your brothers, I think you'd rather have that. And personally, I think it looks better than the Silverado too.
The battery pack is what? How big is the battery pack in that thing? Isn't it like
120 on the base model? So I'm assuming that 120. It's like 273 miles range.
Yeah,
so it's nothing crazy. But then
there aren't a lot of base Sierras out there. If you go, you know, at least last time I looked at them, the guy looked at me like, "Oh yeah, we haven't seen any of those. Those are tough to come by." But they had a bunch of Denalis on the lot. I don't know what the market's like right now. I'd have to take a peek at and see. But yeah, no, listen, great, great vehicles. As a matter of fact, that vehicle in the Silverado trim was the one that won our race from Jacksonville to San Diego in the from an efficiency standpoint. And it was pretty cool. And they had like the base spec. The guys were dressed up. They had like the yellow light on the top, and it was like they had the yellow vests, you know, when they were charging. So it was really funny, but good vehicles. I really like the Silverados and the GMC Sierras.
Well, you're going to enjoy the rest of our letters, because it's a pretty truck heavy show we have for you today. So let's find these folks our next favorite car. Our first email comes to us from Jason, and he writes, "Hello. I run a farm, and during the harvest season, we haul produce to the processing plant, which is about 10 miles from the farm. We make 4 to 5 round trips per day over a 10 to 12 day period. We finish at 4 in the afternoon, start at 6 in the morning, so there's plenty of time for an overnight charge. We use a gooseneck flatbed trailer with a GVRW of 16,000 pounds. Currently, we're hauling this with a diesel Ford F-350. Flatbed. It works great, but with 350,000 miles on it, it's time to start thinking about a replacement. Is there anything in the EV space right now that would function as our harvest hauler, but still have functionality as a daily farm truck in other times of the year? Our budget is 50,000. So this is probably a tall order, but I'll bet something you will enjoy thinking about. Absolutely love the podcast, and I am looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Best, Jason." Okay, so I'm going to kick this one off a little bit, because unfortunately, a gooseneck hitch is not really feasible with an electric truck. Usually those are mounted to the frame rails of the truck and come up through the floor of the bed. See, on an electric truck, that's where the battery is, right under the bed. And this is a unibody kind of construction, so I'm not exactly sure what the frame rails are, how it all works out. It's basically not going to happen unless you do some really expensive custom fab, and I don't think that's really what you're looking for here. So I would just suggest go into a bumper trailer, and it will have to have a lower GVRW, because like Chevrolet has said that they have a model coming with a 20,000 pound towing capacity that will, you know, eventually join their lineup. But right now, 12,500 is a limit. So I would suggest for Jason here, a Silverado EV in the 5WT work truck spec. So Chevrolet has said, so 5WT, this is the only, I think it's one of the only work truck specs that gives you that full 12,500 pound gross trailer rating. I think the LTs also have that, but then for various reasons, you know, they've had to lower it a bit. So like 10,005 on different trims. You have to check that out for sure with it when you go to buy. But anyway, that those trucks are pretty sweet. Over 220 kilowatt hours of battery in the bigger ones. This will have all the range and the grunt you need to handle your harvest season with no problems. And then it gives you a truck with maybe 424 miles of EPA range, a huge front trunk, and then outlets as well to plug to power tools. If you're working some way away from the farm buildings or whatever, it's just a great utility in a truck. So
hey, what do you guys think about this product? A couple things on this. You're right. The Silverado EV has the highest GVWR of any EV truck out there. Mm-hmm. Hummer's 12,000, mm-hmm. but the Silverado EV in the work truck spec is 12,500. But the specific ask of this gentleman is to have a 16,500 or 16,000 pound GVWR. You just can't do it. And the other thing that I would caution you about is that the GVWR of the trailer itself is one thing, but you also have to add to that the GVWR of the vehicle that you are using to tow. And when you add those two together, whatever that is, you have to check your state's regulation to see if that exceeds. You may need to have a CDL, which is a commercial driver's license, in order to pull a rig like that. So I don't believe you would run into it. But look, I have an F-350 diesel with a gooseneck pulling a Brinkley fifth wheel RV. And technically, my setup in the state of Connecticut, I'm over the limit. So I would need to have a CDL in the state of Connecticut. However, in the state of Florida, as long as you're using it for non-commercial purposes, but you are using it for commercial purposes, so I think you're kind of screwed there as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hair on this question, but to answer your question right now, there's no EV that's going to pull 16,000 GVWR. Doesn't exist.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you basically need a F-250, right. 350.
Yeah, and you've already got that. So, that's why I bought a F-350 diesel, because I went through this exact situation, and you know, it's really tricky. You got to be really careful, and the state of Texas is specifically really, they really will look at, and it doesn't matter how much weight you're carrying, they'll look at the GVWR of your vehicle on the sticker, and they'll look at the GVWR of the trailer. If those two add up to more, even if you're way under, you're going to get impounded in Texas. There are videos of guys that do that. So be careful. Good news is you're not going to find a solution. So
yeah.
Unfortunately,
I was just slightly lighter trailer. I don't know. Maybe you have to make an extra trip or two, or maybe just wait until the 20,000 pound towing capacity Chevy comes out, you know? Yeah, I haven't heard anything really news about that. I just saw that today, actually, in Car and Driver, that statement from Chevrolet. And I was like, oh, okay. That's at least I've been thinking about, you know, heavy duty trucks. Like, you know, we have F-250, 350s and things. We don't really have that in the electric world yet. And it's, you know, it's time, really.
Yeah.
So yeah. And we didn't look at any particular trucks. Oh, I pulled up a few trucks. Here, I'm not sure. He should be able to get within his budget. I think he had a hard $50,000 budget. And this is kind of what we're looking at right now. These are brand new trucks, actually. These work trucks. 45, 95. Of course, this might not be the exact, you know, price you'll pay. But it'll be in this neighborhood, though, you know. Maybe a little bit over 50, looks like, actually. But you could actually go, you know, these are brand new, so you could go used and find something that works under 50, for, you know, with low miles. I'm pretty sure that's something you could find out there.
Yep.
All right. Shall we move along?
I think so.
You want to add it to anything to that, Andrew?
Yeah, just same thing. Can't really get a gooseneck EV.
Right, right.
I actually, I never thought about that, but you're right. Because like my, on my F-350, I got holes in the, you know, where like the brackets go and all of that. So the one thing I would be curious about is gooseneck is one thing, but fifth wheel is, generally speaking, that's probably the same issue, but that's a bracket that goes up. It's a different contraption to connect up than a gooseneck.
True.
So a gooseneck is just a ball in the bed of your truck, and a fifth wheel has got a bracket, and then what you do is you slide in to that, and it clamps on. So gooseneck
like a collar, like a tractor trailer.
So in a gooseneck, basically the truck has the ball, right? In a fifth wheel, your hitch has the ball. So the it's like the opposite, and so, but either way, you're still screwed on the GVWR.
Right. Well, we can move on. The other thing with goosenecks, real quick, is they also put a lot more weight on your bed than a regular trailer, and so you have to look at that capacity as well. You know, how much weight are you putting on your suspension on the bed?
Yeah.
Okay. So our next email comes to us from David. He says, "Hey team, I have a brutal daily commute, 90 miles round trip, almost entirely highway internet driving at 75 to 80 miles an hour. Because of my workplace setup, I have access to free level 2 charging at the office." Awesome. "So I'll be doing half my charging on their dime. I have a strict budget of $35,000. I'm between two completely different paths. Buying a brand new lower range model, like a base Hyundai Ioniq 5, a Chevy EQ to get the full factory warranty. Buying a used higher end model, Ford F-150 Lightning, or a Tesla Model 3 long range that has already taken the initial depreciation hit. Given how much highway speeds degrade cold weather range and the fact that I'll be racking up nearly 25,000 miles a year, which strategy makes sense for long-term reliability and cost per mile? Appreciate all the insight you guys give on the show every week. I listen to the podcast on the drive. Cheers, David."
Andrew, go for it.
Okay.
What do you think?
My take: do not buy a new base Hyundai Ioniq 5 at all, because that one's a small battery, makes like 167 horsepower. Base interior, all cloth seats, doesn't even have a rear center armrest, not a nice car, does not have good residual values. Nobody wants the SE standard range at all on the used market. So for your exit strategy, Dave, this would be a no-go. But I would recommend going with like a nice used 2025 SEL or limited off-lease Ioniq 5. So one just came off the lease. You can get one for less than a new base Ioniq 5. Now, there's still good deals on new Ioniq 5s, but I still think used is the way to go with an Ioniq 5. So Ioniq 5, I think, great car. Maybe you can even get an XRT trim too if you live in a colder environment, you want some more ground clearance, etc. So that's an option. Used Model 3 long range rear or all-wheel drive, fantastic car. You can't go wrong with that. Tech is great. All those older ones will have autopilot. You could always upgrade to FSD if you want that as well. I think the Model 3 is a great choice. Equinox EV, I think that's definitely a solid option as well. Can't really go wrong with that. The charging speeds are a little bit slower, but doesn't really matter if you're just level 2 charging. And then also a used F-150 Lightning. I think those are great. But you can't really get them for under 35 anymore. And it will be a standard range, which is still going to be fine for the commute, but it's hard to find Lightnings for under 35. And then the other thing too is if you do get a Lightning for under 35, it's going to be the Pro or an XLT, and both of those as standard do not come with adaptive cruise control. So if you're driving 90 miles, you kind of want to have those safety features. So I think the short answer is there's a lot of great options. F-150 Lightning probably is not going to be one of them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I echo that. The one thing, though, I just want to maybe give you a little bit of context. 90 miles round trip, while that sounds like a grind, that's nothing for, unless you're buying a mini EV, right? they're whether it's a Bolt, a Leaf, an Equinox, a Kona, a Niro, a BZ, any of Model Ys, Model 3s, any of these cars, you'll be able to do two full days of driving on your commute and not charge. Right? Like, you'll be able to charge one day, not charge that night, drive it, and then charge the next day or whatever. So that's not, you know, even in, to me, 90 miles isn't even a challenge for today's EVs. Even in cold weather, I think you're going to be fine with the range. Most of these vehicles have well over 200 miles of range, and you'll be fine. I definitely like your suggestion, Andrew, about getting an older Model 3 or Y, for that matter, that has autopilot. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't need FSD, but lane centering is, I think it could save your life. And if you're tired, you're getting up in the morning, whatever it is, I think that having that kind of tech is really smart. And you won't get Blue Cruise on those base 150s, like Andrew mentioned. So, you know, just basic lane centering is pretty much on all these cars, like on the Hyundais, on the EGMP platforms, whether it's a, you know, in EV6 or an Ioniq 5, you know, whether you get HDA1, which is basic lane centering, or HDA2, which will also add lane changing, you could find an HDA1 equipped Ioniq 5 or EV6 and be really happy. But I think, especially with that kind of a mundane commute where you're just highway, you want it, you know, autopilot of some sort, lane centering of some sort.
100%. And I think with the Hyundais, just the warranty is so good. It's like, I would just go with the used one because you get a 10-year, 100,000-mile battery drivetrain warranty. And then the basic warranty is 5 years, 60,000 miles. So you could literally get a 2-year-old Ioniq 5 with low miles, and it's basically going to have the same warranty as a new Equinox, just minus the balance of the high-voltage battery and component warranty.
Yep.
Good options.
Well, yeah. Well, Andrew, you destroyed my thesis. I was thinking, I was going to go. Well, first I thought, okay, Model 3, because that's, I mean, I know that car, and it's like a great hobby cruiser. You can drive all day long in that thing. But then I saw, Ford F-150 Lightning. I'm like I'm on a truck binge right now for under 35. Can you even find that? So I looked, and like you said, there was no big battery versions of that out there at all. So yeah, I gave up once I realized I was way overpriced. Though I did see some nice ones on your site, Evercar's site. So you got some nice F-150 Lightnings. Shout out to Evercar's. I was hoping actually to use them, but I couldn't quite find one that worked for this particular case. But
I just want to say that
$35,000.
If you're looking to buy this, call me first. I'll negotiate with Andrew. I'll take care of you. Don't you worry.
Yeah, we'll get it down to 25.
All right. So this is what's out there, basically representative of what's out there in a Ford, 235 miles of range rather than 320 for the bigger battery versions, which is enough to do the thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's a great highway cruiser. These things are great. Then you have a nice pickup truck for when you're not running back and forth to work. 35. This one, though, it does have already, to get it down to this price, you got to get some miles. So maybe that's fine. I don't know. I haven't really heard a lot about these things going bad, really. So
39,000. That's a toddler. That's not even in nursery school yet. Come on. That's nothing.
Right. But he's going to be putting on like 25,000 miles a year. So in my mind, I'd like them to start lower than that. No, but
you're right. It's always better to start lower. But you know, from a reliability standpoint, 39,000 miles is just not a lot. What is that thing bumper to? What did it come with? 4-year 50 or are those 336, Andrew?
They come with, the basic is 3-year 36 on the Lightning. Now, this is actually interesting. We've actually noticed this too with Lightnings, just with some battery testing, is sometimes the batteries actually go bad prematurely in the Lightnings. And it's like not, it's uncommon, but it's less uncommon than I thought it was. And it's basically, you get these cell voltage deviation issues. And you basically just get a big, because you're limited by the lowest performing battery cell. And I've seen several battery replacements on Lightnings before. I'm not trying to scare anyone away, but there is just something about, like, we've seen batteries go bad on them at like 10,000 miles. Take it in. Obviously, it's all under warranty, so that's good.
Yeah.
But I have seen it before on like pretty early Lightnings, and I've seen several of them happen. So just something to keep in mind. But even if that does happen under warranty, then great. You got a brand new battery pack. So I'd say that's fine.
It's true.
Get a car as well.
A silver lining.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take a brand new battery pack. That would be great. Yeah, so there you go, David. Hopefully you can find something in there that works for you. See, our final email comes to us from Sarah and Marcus. They write, "Hello, my partner and I live entirely off-grid on a homestead in northern Arizona. We produce all our own power through a 12-kilowatt ground-mounted solar array paired with a 30-kilowatt-hour home battery bank. We are looking to replace our old gas Subaru with a Rivian R1T. It would be our primary vehicle for runs into town about 45 minutes away and hauling building supplies, feed, and water tanks. My question is about the logistics of charging an EV solely from the off-grid solar setup. So we average about 6.5 hours of peak sun per day. Is it realistic to expect our system to handle an EV with a large battery pack, or are we going to end up draining our home storage and sitting in the dark? We usually drive into town twice a week. Love the podcast. Keep up the fantastic work. Best, Sarah and Marcus." So
let's assume,
I didn't pick
let's
a specific
assume there's no charging in town where they either level 2 or DC fast charger
right.
in town,
right?
Right? Here at the RV lot last night, I plugged in the Model Y to just a regular 110 at 18% state of charge. It's an 81 kilowatt hour battery pack, and that was at 9 o'clock last night, so 14 hours, and I went from 18% to 36%. It's now at 36%. So it'll charge roughly that car roughly 3 miles every hour. If you're going into the town twice a week, and how many miles was it into town?
45 miles one way.
I think you probably won't have an issue just sipping. You know, you could even lower on the Rivian. You could lower the consumption of the amps. You know, maybe you could go down to even like, instead of 12 amps, you maybe could go to 6 or even 3 amps and just let it trickle charge. And then when you take that thing on the road, on a road trip, you're going to have a DC fast charging network everywhere. So I like that. Worst case scenario, add another battery, right? So you could buy another device to store up some energy. So you have that in your back pocket. But I think you could do it. I'd love to have you do it, and I'd love to have you follow up, and I'd like to see how that works out for you. Andrew, am I too aggressive, or what do you think?
No, I totally agree. I was just running the numbers real quick, but a 12 kilowatt solar array at 6.5 hours a day, that should be 78 kilowatt hours a day. Now, let's just use like multiply that by 0.9 to account for efficiency losses. So let's just say like, I don't know, 70-ish kilowatt hours.
Sure.
That would charge that home battery 2 times every day. So I don't think you're going through that much energy as a home. There's probably other stuff as well, because it sounds
AC
like more.
AC consumption is really thirsty, though. So
we don't
want you like, sweating to death in the house at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But at night, you know, the funny thing is your consumption of the AC goes down at night, but your replenishment of the battery, it goes to zero at night, obviously. So you'd have to manage that a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm not too familiar with solar arrays, but on paper, you're making a lot of energy. And I don't think you'd go wrong with a Rivian. And then plus you can also, well, not the Rivian, but if it was like a Lightning or something, then you could use it as an additional backup battery. So yeah. I say can't go wrong with a Rivian. And it's a great car. And I think that 45 miles to the town twice a week. That's 90 miles to the town every week is not going to be that much of a burden on your solar setup.
You know, Andrew, you bring up a great point that for this use case, finding, choosing. So does an R, she's looking at an R1T. Is that what it was? Yeah. Or an R1S? Mm-hmm. Right. Does that vehicle do vehicle to load? I should know this, but I don't.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
My dad just bought a used one. He was trying to see if it does, and I don't think it does.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, so if you think about it, I know your heart may be set on a Rivian, but if you identify a vehicle that does have vehicle to, let's just say, output, then you've got a really great way as a backup to power your house as well for, you know, the big bash party when Andrew, Dominic, and I come out for celebrating this purchase. You want to make sure you have enough energy to power the sound system and all the fun toys and the carnival rides. So, you know, I think maybe expand your horizons a little bit beyond just the Rivian. Just saying, I think you could do it with the Rivian, but think about the vehicle to load or vehicle to home capability, because that would give you a huge battery pack. If the battery you have right now is a 30 kilowatt hour battery pack, what's the size in a Rivian? Yeah. Rivian, it's what, 120?
Goes up to 140, yeah.
130? No, max pack is 140.
So you'd have think about that. You'd be increasing, if it had vehicle to home or vehicle to load, you would be increasing, you'd have four of those battery packs. So you'd have a total of five. That's pretty sweet.
And just to give an idea of what used Rivian prices are like right now. So this is used Rivian's R1Ts below 30,000 miles, no accidents.
They've gone up titles. Recently too.
Yeah, well, this is today's, you know, I just looked up. So 55 is kind of where they start, 56 kind of just where they start, and it goes up from there, right? And then you have all the different configurations to figure out, you know, what do you want? You want the original quad motor launch? You want the refreshed dual motor? You know, different sizes of batteries? There's a whole lot of decisions to make when you want to go buy a Rivian R1T. There's so many trims and different variations on it.
By the way, the R2.
I'm not even sure where we get.
The R2 is supposed to have vehicle to load, vehicle to home as well, so bi-directional charging.
Right.
So if your heart's set on a Rivian, maybe you check out an R2. I know it's not a pickup, but something to consider.
Right. Yeah, that's a fair shot. Yeah, I think they will make it a smaller pickup truck eventually. Maybe that's what the R4 or R5 is going to be. They're talking about these other trucks coming down the road. So, you know, fingers crossed they're going to do something like that because. I don't know. I think a compact truck, we don't really have much right now in that area, but I guess we'll have the Slate coming soon and we'll have the Ford coming soon. But
F-150 Lightning, it's got bi-directional.
True. True. Yeah. Also fine for what they're doing. Yep. And I don't think much any less efficient than the Rivian really going down the road. It's like they're about... yeah, I'm not sure. It depends on how fast you're going with the Rivians, but
yeah.
Or any pickup truck, but yeah. So I guess we'll leave it there. Call it an episode.
I think we got some good choices.
All right.
Yeah.
Back to the gooseneck.
Well, right. Except sorry about that.
Yeah.
But thank you all very much for hanging out with us. Appreciate it. Let us know in the comments why we're wrong and about everything and what you would suggest instead. If you're ready for your own battery bargain, drop us an email at hello@batteriesincludedpodcast.com with your car needs, desires, and budget. And we'll see you on the next episode. Ciao.